Hello and welcome to all of our listeners to the next episode of the Ask AI podcast. I'm your host, Jackson Kahn. Today we're really excited to delve into another aspect of AI, particularly going to focus on product design. We're lucky enough to be joined by Winter Wei, who is the product design lead at Cura Systems, one of the fastest growing companies in Toronto, in Canada, and North America, particularly focused on machine learning. Winter's going to tell us a bit more about Cura, and we're very excited to be here with us today. Welcome, Winter.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And we're really, really excited to have you too, particularly because, you know, we haven't had a lot of folks with a design focus. We've had a lot of different people from technical backgrounds, from entrepreneurial backgrounds. So I'm really excited to talk to you today and particularly learn about what you're up to and how you think about design when it comes to machine learning products. Before we jump into what you're doing for work, I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about you and how you got to where you are.
Sure. So I have a somewhat winding story about how I come to work at Cura. I actually did my undergrad in the University of Toronto, majored in actuarial science, so that's a lot of math and statistics. But then after I graduated from university, I didn't think that was the right career path for me, so I became a designer. So working as a UX designer, I learned a little bit about front-end development, and that's how I ultimately ended up working at Cura as Cura's first designer. So the rest is history.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I love how you blended those different skill sets. I was on just watching a panel today, and I found that they kept talking about how people now are particularly going to re-educate themselves more and more over life. And I think we're all seeing that careers are changing, things are blurring, and a lot of those transitional skill sets matter more than ever.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because now that I'm looking back, right, like because Cura, we deal with a lot of machine learning driven features. And now for me, my education in actuarial science and stats actually became very relevant when it comes to, you know, trying to understand the machine learning concepts. So yeah, for sure.
That's incredible. And I'm wondering now, you know, tell us please about Cura Systems. What are you guys up to? How did it start and where are you heading?
Yeah. So the starting point of Cura Systems, I think that started about 8 years ago. The two co-founders, Noah Weisberg and Alexander Hudak. Mm-hmm. So Noah used to be, before his founding Cura, he was actually M&A transactional lawyer, which means that he works in a law firm based in New York, and his day-to-day is a lot of, you know, last minute, Friday afternoon, getting a phone call saying, oh, there's a deal coming up. Now you have to review like thousands of contracts. Mm-hmm. So then your weekend is gone, and then you're really tired, which also means that you make a mistake in reviewing contracts. And so basically, Cura is Noah sort of trying to solve his own problem as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And then he got in touch with Alex, who was by the time doing his postdoc at Waterloo. So then the two of them met and started working on the tech for Cura.
That's fantastic. Which, what do you think is the main challenge for your customers, for the organizations that are dealing with contracts day to day now?
Yeah, so I think there are two main challenges. One is a time limit and a resource limit. In particular, if you think about due diligence in a typical like merger and acquisition transactions, you're dealt with like thousands, if not more, legal contracts that a small team of lawyers need to go through in a few days or a few weeks. So that imposed a lot of sort of constraints in terms of time, but also in terms of resource. And they typically work in smaller teams. So which means that within this limit, you have to go through this many contracts to find the potential risk, which makes it a good way to think about it is really to find the needle in a haystack. So that is the biggest challenge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about that? So finding the needle within the haystack, like how do you think about that as a problem?
Yeah, so basically, ultimately, if you think about merger and acquisition transactions, ultimately, people are looking for the risk that might potentially make the deal not be able to go through, right? So you're basically looking for that risk, which means that you have to go through like all of the thousands of contracts to find that potential risk.
Cool, and I guess I'm wondering now, could you talk more about the specific solution that you have at Cura for these types of problems?
Yeah, so basically we have a machine learning algorithm that learns what a key clause look like in the legal contract. So for example, if you think about employment contracts, within employment contracts, there are a few things that are more important than others, right? Like think about termination. What are the provisions for termination? So Cura basically learns how those particular clauses look like. So what a termination clause would look like, what a change of control clause would look like, what an assignment clause would look like. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, Kira would be able to automatically extract those key clauses out of legal contracts, so which makes document review and analysis a lot easier and faster.
That's really, really interesting. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my grandfather a couple days ago, and he was saying, you know, I think anybody can just read a contract. You know, mm-hmm. you don't even need lawyers. I was laughing at that because I did think he was, technically, yes, we can all read the words on the page, but actually understanding mm-hmm. the connotations, the semantics behind that, how it fits into a greater picture, like, that's one of the things that I thought would be harder to replicate. And I suppose what I'm inquiring about is, how do you make sure that you're not only just reading the text and understanding, okay, well, here's some of the things, general things being mentioned, but actually the context, the semantics, the real themes, and often, you know, our interpretation of the law is so important. Yeah. I mean, how can you at Kira distinguish that?
Well, ultimately, we believe that's still in the hands of the lawyer. Okay. So what Kira does at this point is that it will extract all the key clauses. So that's still like on a text verbatim level, if you will. But that at least gives the lawyers a starting point of saying, okay, instead of reading all of these documents page by page, mm-hmm. line by line, you can start here by looking at these highlights. And then if there are things that are questionable, you can delve into them. But then at least that gives them a starting point of saying, these are the important things I should focus on.
So it's an effectively at this time, there's the automatic highlighting and it's summarizing and allowing them to skim through much more quickly based on the content that actually matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, very, very cool. And I'm wondering, you know, can you talk more about how is that artificial intelligence actually working in your product?
Yeah. So we do have one internal machine learning research team that's dedicated in working in exploring the state of art sort of technologies to improve our algorithm. We also have another team of dedicated legal experts mm-hmm. that work to train those models. Models, you know, for example, like what the key clauses look like. Mm-hmm. So those team, legal experts team, we call them the legal knowledge engineering team. They basically spend a lot of time just using public domain contracts to train the models for Kira to learn what particular clauses look like in different contexts.
Oh, that's really interesting. And one of the things I've been thinking about is, you know, specifically around very complex products, machine learning products, mm-hmm. how have you started maybe adjusting your product development process?
Yeah. So in general, our design, the product design process is still very, in a way, we take a very, very user research driven process, mm-hmm. obviously, mm-hmm. which means that we usually start with a very, you know, generative, explorative research process, trying to understand what our user needs are, what their goals are, what are their tasks, which really requires us to understand their workflow, their process, and even some of the legal technicalities, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that part is still very general design process, regardless whether you're dealing with machine learning driven features or not. Like, you have to do those things. But when it comes to machine learning driven features, there are a few tricky things that we have to deal with. There are a few challenges. One of them really is, I'll say the word trust, but trust is such a loaded word that I really don't like to use it very much. But basically, on the surface, most users won't intuitively trust a black box algorithm.
Yeah.
Right? When you're presented with some users, especially I think in our domain, our users are all domain experts. Mm-hmm. So the cost of making a mistake is very, very high.
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, unlike consumer product where if you make a, like Google Home makes a mistake, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, somebody might lose $5 or get misdirections or something. But in your case, somebody, who knows, maybe somebody could go to jail.
Yeah,
or you know, a lawyer could be sued. Lots of money, fines, settlements.
So that is definitely why we have to be very careful about how we design how machine learning feature works, mm-hmm. or how it works and how it looks. So we have dealt with a lot of cases where we have to try to design things where we should facilitate that trust. So, for example, there was one feature that we're working on where in the beginning we had a lot of feedback where users were like, how do I trust this? Mm. And then it's on us to actually do do a lot of rounds of user interviews and user testing to understand where their what their mental models are and even learn about their jargons to eventually design something that represents an algorithm that is interpretable. So in a way, the way I think about designing for machine learning driven features, I think about how do we address the problem of interpretability and explainability, which is actually a really big topic and challenge in the community right now.
Can you go a bit further on that? So how do you think about that difference for your role, interpretability versus explainability? Because I've heard those terms expressed in different ways.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that I understand what that means in the context of Kira.
Yeah, for sure. Stepping back a little bit, in the context of this particular feature, which is clustering. So clustering is basically you convert document to vectors and then you group similar documents together.
Okay.
Right. So in the beginning, when we were at the very early prototyping stage, we represented it as the standard visualization for clustering, which are like just bubbles in their own clusters. And when we present that to users, a lot of people were like, oh, I don't understand how it's grouping, so like I can't trust it. Like we need transparency, right? So then if you take users' feedback at face value, then it's like, oh, they need transparency. What does that mean? Should we give them the technical transparency, which is to tell them how it works? But when users say they want transparency, they're not really talking about the technicality of this feature. They don't really need to know how it works. What they actually need to know is, can they predict how this behaves? So if you think about, for example, Amazon, when you look at your recommendations, we think we know how it works, but it's not how it works under the hood. It's really that we have this mental model that we can interpret why we're getting this result. So designing a representation of that so that users can actually interpret what why they're seeing these things. Right.
Yeah.
So that is the job of design.
That was incredible. I think that the way you summarize that and the way that you frame that, I think is so helpful for people thinking about how do we design for these types of problems. I wish we had all day. I guess the last main question I want to ask you is, you talked a bit about ethics. What I'm wondering is what you think about how ethics is transforming the way that you think about these problems, how you continue to want to improve there. You talked about some of the things you're doing now. But I'm wondering, what does that look like, not just in your mind for Kira, but what does that look like for our industry going forward, particularly from your vantage point as a designer?
Yeah. In the context of Kira, the sort of ethics problem that we face is a bit different than in the common sense of ethics, right? I know that in our society today, there are a lot of debates about things like the bias in algorithms, like fairness and that kind of thing, which is not inherently something that Kira has to deal with in particular. But there are some sort of ethics-related problems that we have to deal with that is actually quite interesting. I think it's also worth for other companies and communities who are dealing with similar things. So first is privacy and security. Kira takes privacy and security very, very seriously. So the way we deal with it is that actually all of our training data are from public domain.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
We don't collect data from our customers, which actually makes training a lot harder just because the amount of data, right?
Yep.
We actually also allow our customers to train their own models, and training data they use remains with them. We have no visibility to our customers' training data. So related to that, because the capability of our users to be able to train their own models, that is the other aspect of what we believe we should approach ethics in AI, which is that people should have access to technologies. So we believe that you don't need a computer science degree to be able to train a model. You should be able to have a tool, which is something that we developed to be able to use it and train your own models. So accessibility and inclusivity is something that we believe in. Yeah. And then in the end, I think the idea of explainability and interpretability in terms of presenting an AI technology is something that I think the research community in both machine learning and human-computer interaction should sort of put a lot of effort in solving. Because in a way, explainability basically implies that the results that you're giving is both true but also understandable, right? If you only give a result that is true but not understandable, I think it's useless.
Makes a lot of sense. Winter, thanks so much for joining us today. Kira Systems is working on, in some ways, democratizing the power of both law and machine learning to its clients and customers in the community. I was really excited to learn a bit today, some tidbits about how you think about these problems from a design perspective as it relates to the machine learning itself, as well as the ethics in and around that. We'll be looking deeper into these topics as we go forward on the podcast. Definitely check out Kira Systems if you're working in these areas or want to learn more. Winter, anywhere to find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm semi-active on Twitter.
Semi-active, that's better than most. And that's at Winter Way?
Yes.
Perfect. And as you know, you can always find us at the Ask AI podcast at askai.org on Twitter, or you can also find us on our website, askai.org. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back to you with our next episode quite soon.
This episode's senior producer was Mike Letourneau, and executive producer was Chris McClellan. For more information, please visit our website at askai.org.